From Boyhood.
A series of milestones.
To Birdman.
You had a career before the third comic book.
It's time to go in depth on last night's Oscars, the surprises, the snubs, and your questions and calls. It's Ask the Movie Critics on WTOP. Now, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, your MCs, Deborah Feinstein and Bruce Allen.
Welcome to WTOP's Ask the Movie Critic show on this Monday morning, the day after the Academy Awards. It is so great to have our guests in the studio with us.
And the crowd's going wild.
They are. And I don't blame them. We've got three esteemed movie critics here at WTOP. We've got Anne Hornaday of The Washington Post. Great to have you, Anne.
Thank you for having me.
Jen Chaney, who writes for The Washington Post, The Dissolve, a lot of other outlets as well. Always great to have you here.
Great to be here.
And our own Jason Fraley, WTOP's entertainment editor in the studio. Hey, Jason.
Thanks for having me in.
And we are taking your calls at 877-336-1035. You can also submit questions via Facebook and Twitter with the hashtag AskThe. Plenty to talk about, winners and losers and snubs, the show, the host, and of course the speeches as well.
Well, let's start off. We've got a lot to cover here in this hour, obviously. Let's start off by talking about the Oscar show itself. Neil Patrick Harris, of course, the host, hosting for the first time. He opened the show with a little bit of a quip.
Welcome to the 87th Oscars. Tonight we honor Hollywood's best and whitest. Sorry, brightest.
He went for the zinger right off the bat. Anne Hornaday, how do you think he did?
Well, you know, I thought he made a valiant effort. I still think he's a consummate entertainer and a wonderful song and dance man, but the writing just did not serve him well.
Fell a little flat.
It fell very flat. I just think some of those gags, that ongoing briefcase gag with Octavia Spencer, just it didn't work from the moment it started, and then it just got worse. We were talking before the show, as congenial as he is, I didn't feel like he had the same warmth and approachability that Ellen DeGeneres had last year in terms of the interactions with the audience and things like that. So I still respect him so much as a performer, but I felt like it wasn't a good match.
Hmm. Jen?
I mean, the fact that I agree with everything Anne just said, the fact that Neil Patrick Harris, who has done beautifully at so many other award shows, wasn't quite as good at the Oscars, I think really speaks to what an impossible gig the Academy Awards are. And I do think, as Anne just said, the writing was a real problem. I mean, you've hired a team, and the best thing you can come up with is, eat her up with a spoon, here's Reese Witherspoon. I mean, really? And so that kind of stuff just really, it Neil Patrick Harris, I mean, even on that line, he recognized how terrible it was while it was happening. But it just didn't serve him well. And I think he's much better in other shows. They're just too high of a bar. Everybody's too sort of acts like they're at a dinner with the Dowager Countess at the Academy Awards, and he didn't help cut the tension.
Yeah, I felt like he wasn't fully all the way back to life since Gone Girl. You know, he was often Gone Girl, and he hadn't fully been resurrected by the time he had to host the show. Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, they did it. They spoiled it last night, too.
Yeah. Was it all writing, or was it part him?
Well, I don't know. I'm such an NPH believer that I have to believe. I really do put the onus on the writing. I do. I mean, I think he's such a professional that he could deliver just about anything. And it was really the fault of the joke writers.
Speaking of jokes, there are a few of them we're going to get to right after we take a break for traffic and weather.
The Glass Enclosed Nerve Center.
I'm ready to come home.
It's the morning after the Oscars. Now more of Ask the Movie Critics on WTOP. Here are Deborah Feinstein and Bruce Allen.
Welcome back to WTOP's Ask the Movie Critics show until 11 o'clock. By the way, if you've got some questions or comments, we're taking your calls. The number is 877-336-1035, 877-336-1035. Also, you can submit us questions on Facebook and Twitter using the hashtag AskThe.
Now, we were making fun of some of Neil Patrick Harris's joke attempts, one of which was when he poked fun at John Travolta's mispronunciation of Idina Menzel's name at last year's show.
Benedict Cumberbatch. It's not only the most awesome name in show business, it's also the sound you get when you ask John Travolta to pronounce Ben Affleck.
Ouch. Mm-hmm. Ouch. Kind of funny, though.
That was my favorite joke of his. Yeah.
That was good.
That was a good one. There was also that cut where Neil Patrick Harris was trying to, or no, that was John Travolta and Idina Menzel talking to each other.
Please welcome to the stage my very dear friend, Glom Gazingo.
The wickedly talented.
I deserve that. I deserve that. But you, my darling, my beautiful, my wickedly talented Idina Menzel. Talented.
You got it!
Is that right?
That will never get old, I think. Like Oscar lore. That will forever be one of the greatest.
That's what she says. Like that'll follow me around for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And he said, "Yeah, me too."
Right. Exactly.
So let's get to the movies. Best Picture, Birdman. You think that was the right decision?
Well,
Anne Hornaday.
My personal favorite of the year was Boyhood, but I was fully expecting it to go to Birdman just based on the precursor awards. You know, all the Guild Awards that it had won coming in. But what I did think was that they would at least split it between Birdman for Best Picture and Richard Linklater for Best Director. And so I was much more disappointed that Linklater missed out for Best Director than I was for Birdman. You know, honestly, we're talking about two really interesting, very inventive, expressive personal films. And they were literally one and two on my top 10 list. So I'm not complaining, mind you, but it would have been nice to. I was a little surprised at how much Birdman swept the big awards.
Was it the same for you, those two movies, Birdman and Boyhood?
Yes, Dan? And in fact, I was calling for sort of a split, but the opposite one, where I thought Iñárritu would win director and Boyhood would still win Best Picture, just because I, too, am a huge fan of Richard Linklater's work, and I just think he has spent, you know, 20-plus years just really sticking to his guns and doing what he does. Even though he has made some mainstream Hollywood films, he really has kind of stuck to his own artistic compass, and he isn't the kind of person who seems to need awards attention, which is why I wanted him to have it, you know? And so that made me sad.
And Jason, you like both of them too, right?
Yeah, they were 1A and 1B for me too. I think I had Boyhood 1 and Birdman 2. But I was like Jen. I was thinking and hoping that it would go to Iñárritu for director just because of the cinematic language they did with the one single take. And then Boyhood, you know, maybe would get Best Picture so Linklater could get the award for that. Just more as the overall, you know, one-of-a-kind time capsule movie. And afterwards, when Linklater didn't get anything, I kept hoping that he had made Boyhood a, you know, a 13-year experiment instead of 12, so he didn't have to go up against Birdman, because they're both two, you know, masterful movies. So
of course there'll be something better next year.
Of
too,
course. So. Yeah, no, it just feels like, in hindsight, I feel like 20 years from now we'll say, man, we kind of dropped the ball by not giving him anything for that movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just Patricia Arquette. Mm-hmm.
Really seems like a loss. And also, well, we're going to get to Selma later on, mm-hmm. but really kind of a shutout for Selma, other than winning for Song, which we'll talk about during the show, but to me, that movie was perhaps the most moving that I've seen in all the categories. I mean, I was bawling my eyes yes. out during that movie, and nothing.
Yeah, I know. And in any other year, it has all of the contours and lineaments and DNA of a Best Picture. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, this is like mm-hmm. it's about a crucial chapter in American history. Beautifully acted, by my lights, gorgeously directed and mm-hmm. shot. And yeah, that was a big disappointment yeah. too. I mean, I was advocating for Boyhood just based on the pure audaciousness of it and the inventiveness of it. And that I do think that Rick invented a new visual language with that film, or at least refined one that was already with us. But, I was really rooting for Selma, and it's a shame that Ava DuVernay, the director, didn't get nominated, because that was just such a huge undertaking. And I thought she acquitted it with just great skill.
What happened there? Great. Does anybody have an explanation for why this was such a shutout for Selma?
Well, there are two. There. One theory is that, you know, she finished it relatively late in the season, and so they didn't get DVDs pressed until very late, and so those screeners that are crucial to voting, because people don't all, you know, the Academy members and other Guild members don't get to the theaters; they need to see them at home. So a lot of the chatter, you know, was that those screeners just went out too late for people to see it enough to get any kind of momentum going.
Is that important, the campaigning for the Best Picture?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It is. But I was going to say, one of the things that struck me during the telecast was, you know, the powerful performance of the song from that film and the way the crowd responded, you know, Chris Pine crying and all of that. I mean, you could sense, you know, just an enormous amount of affection and respect for that film in the room. And it just spoke to such a huge disconnect between what the Academy actually chose to do. It was very strange.
Yeah, Selma was my number three movie of the year behind those other two. And, you know, you already mentioned Ava DuVernay. I wish she would have gotten at least a nomination for director. But in the actor category, David Oyelowo wasn't even in there. And for me, if he was in there, I would have been rooting for him to win, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. He was that good as Martin Luther King. He made King a very human figure, you know, warts and all in this performance. Mm-hmm. And it was just a shame to not even see him in there.
There was a lot of course, discussion about the historical accuracy of that film. And you wrote an interesting piece in Sunday's Washington Post that I read about the focus on movies and film and their historical accuracies and inaccuracies versus appreciating it just for the art of the movie.
Right. I mean, this is, you know, it's an enduring kind of perennial problem. And I think it's almost heightened by being in Washington because so many of these films have a Washington component, you know? I mean, they're either about our recent political history or they're about history, like a Lincoln or a Selma. And you have so many people living here who were there, you know, at the creation. I mean, often there were eyewitnesses to these events or they are historians who've spent their lives chronicling these events. And so I understand their sensitivity to accuracy and that they see these things through a certain lens. And I think that their points of view are hugely valuable and interesting. But I do think that often that discussion overshadows and obscures what these are, which are they're pieces of historical fiction that occupy kind of another region in our imagination between symbolic reality and reality itself. And, you know, I just thought that that particular charge against Selma was way overblown, for one thing. I don't think Johnson was a villain at all in that movie. And it did, I think, threaten to obscure and distort the great artistic achievement of that movie.
And we are joined today by Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post, Jen Chaney, who writes for the Post and the Dissolve and others, and our own WTOP Entertainment editor, Jason Fraley. Again, the number is 877-336-1035.
And we're going to head to the phones right now. We're going to speak we're going to Krista in Fredericksburg. Krista, what's your question for our panel?
Hi, my question was whether or not the panelists thought there was an adequate representation of women for Best Picture. Best Picture, there was obviously Birdman, American Sniper, The Theory of Everything, Boyhood, but many of the films that women were up for in Best Actress didn't actually make it into Best Picture, and I thought there may have been some sort of sexist undertones. What were your thoughts?
Jen, you want to take that one first?
Sure. I think I would agree with that. I think that, you know, one example, Wild, which was a film that a lot of people thought maybe would be a contender for Best Picture and perhaps should have been, was not. So, in addition to the racial issues and undertones in the nominees this year, I think there was certainly a sexist undertone to it as well. But, you know, I have to say, God bless Patricia Arquette for doing that 180 on her speech at the end there and sort of raising that issue in a really powerful way that got a stamp of approval from Meryl Streep. I think even though that was the case with the nominations, it was a way to sort of bring that issue up at the ceremony and kind of keep it at the forefront.
Anne, anything to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it really illustrates, you know, every year a professor at San Diego State University named Martha Lauzon comes out with a celluloid glass ceiling report where she talks about, she does research on women's representation both in front of the camera and behind the camera. And this year she found that in last year's films, women accounted for 12% of the protagonists. I mean, if you look at, you know, who gets to do what, it's very difficult to find films in which there's a strong female protagonist doing something unconventional. You know, I mean, most of the nominees this year, I'm not taking anything away from their performances. They were all pretty wonderful, but they played moms or they played daughters, you know, or they played helpmeets. Strong women all, you know, very powerful and strong women, but the range is just not nearly as broad for women's roles as it is for men's. And I think that that Best Picture lineup absolutely shows you that in terms of who gets to do what.
Interesting. All right, let's move along here. We talked about Best Picture. Let's head over to the Best Actor category. Eddie Redmayne winning for The Theory of Everything, and his acceptance speech, his joy was pretty clear.
Thank you. Thank you to the Academy. I don't think I'm capable of articulating quite how I feel right now, but please know this. I am fully aware that I am a lucky, lucky man. This Oscar, wow,
He was pretty happy, and it was a pretty physical performance, too.
I think he felt he was lucky because voters may have seen Jupiter Ascending right before, which bombed, and I didn't think he was very good in it either, so I think he realized he was lucky. No, but in all seriousness, The Theory of Everything, him as Stephen Hawking, was an amazing performance. We literally, I felt like we watched him decay on screen, similar to Julianne Moore in the actress category, which we'll get to for Alzheimer's. But man, I watching that show, I kept thinking this has got to be the toughest, one of the toughest categories, because in any other year, I mean, you could have given it to Bradley Cooper, Benedict Cumberbatch, and I was personally pulling for Michael Keaton. I was rooting for that, you know, superhero, that comeback story, but in the end, he kind of suffered the same fate as Mickey Rourke when he tried to do his comeback with the wrestler, didn't he? Mm-hmm.
Well, as long as you mentioned Julianne Moore.
I'm thrilled, actually, that that we were able to hopefully shine a light on Alzheimer's disease. So many people with this disease feel isolated and marginalized.
Julianne Moore winning for Still Alice, of course, and they're talking about early onset Alzheimer's disease in her acceptance speech. She really was the front runner, was she not, Jen Chaney?
She was. I mean, if anyone else had won, and not to diminish their performances, but it would have been shocking. And partly because Julianne Moore was very, very good in Still Alice, but also because she's been very, very good for a very long time. This was her fifth nomination. It was just time to reward her body of work in addition to this particular performance. And I was very happy to see her up there.
Anne, anybody left out there that you think was more deserving?
Oh, no, I thought she did deserve it. And I was thrilled to see her as well. But what's interesting, the first time I saw Eddie Redmayne was in an HBO movie where he played Julianne Moore's son.
Really?
Yeah, it came out, and it helped me out here, gang, if you can remember the title of that. They played, it was a real-life story, and it was a very wealthy couple and their son, and they get divorced, and she and the son, it's about their relationship. It was a really fascinating film. I wish I could remember the title. So it was
we'll get our researchers on
that. It was sort
of
cool to me to see them, you know, both win last night.
Another one that seemed like a foregone conclusion was J.K. Simmons in Whiplash.
Call your mom, call your dad. If you're lucky enough to have a parent or two alive on this planet, call them. Don't text, don't email. Call them on the phone. Tell them you love them and thank them and listen to them for as long as they want to talk to you.
I feel like he knew this was coming from other awards ceremonies where he was clearly the winner. How does it get down to a horse race or a favorite? How do they know who's going to win?
Well, you know, it's a fascinating morphology. I'm sorry. Yeah, Anne Hornaday here. It is a fascinating kind of taxonomy and a fascinating arc to follow, and it starts in September during the Venice Film Festival and then the Telluride Film Festival and the Toronto Film Festival. Those are the three main launching pads for these awards season films, and that's when critics like me and bloggers and other Oscar prognosticators go. They watch these things and they come out with their great mentionings. You know, they start that momentum, and then publicists and campaign professionals seize on that commentary, and they start to kind of build this inevitability. And it gains speed with Critics Awards and then Guild Awards and then the Golden Globes, and it just sort of takes on this life of its own. So then you get this sense of front runners and horse races and things like that.
And I think the reality is the members of the Academy, as much as they want to watch every single film, every single performance, they simply don't have the time. So when it starts to winnow down to a couple people, that just sort of creates a priority list for them to say, I should really watch J.K. Simmons, and or everybody else is voting for J.K. Simmons. I guess that's probably the right thing to do. I think that probably has an impact, too.
True. But you know what's good about all of this? It seems sort of self-indulgent and silly on one side, but it really does bring awareness to films that otherwise might get lost. So, for instance, you know, people are going to see Still Alice now because they're curious about what won Julianne Moore the Oscar. Mm-hmm. Same with Whiplash, little teeny movie, you know, that really got a lot of love last night. So I think it's really become this essential way of marketing films that would not be able to afford like a big TV campaign or something like that. So
we're going to break for traffic and weather. When we come back, we've got a movie history question for Jason. Stand by for that.
And welcome back. We are with Jen Chaney, who writes for The Washington Post, The Dissolve, and others, Anne Hornaday of The Washington Post, and our own WTOP entertainment editor, Jason Fraley. Taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. You're also welcome to submit questions via Facebook and on Twitter with hashtag AskThe.
We're going to go to the phones right now and talk to John, who's calling in from Lansdowne. John, great to have you here on Ask the Movie Critics. What's your question for our panel?
Oh, Okay, I have a question as to why the director of Birdman, who won Best Director and, of course, Best Picture, Alejandro, I can't pronounce his last name, he's receiving so many accolades for seemingly being the first to use the continuous shot filmmaking. That very technique was used by the late, great Sir Alfred Hitchcock in his 1948 film, Rope. Granted, because of the older technology, Hitch had to pan into a certain scene, stop the camera, and then reload with another canister, but he picked up from where he left, and he really pioneered that technique, and Hitch never got an Academy Award.
Jason, right up your alley here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we just did a rewriting Oscar history last week, and I let off right off the bat saying I think that's the biggest travesty in all of Oscar history is how does Alfred Hitchcock not win Best Director? I mean, for Rear Window and Vertigo and North by Northwest and Psycho, it's unbelievable.
He never won for anything.
Well, Rebecca won Best Picture in 1940, but that was David O. Selznick producing it. It was the follow-up to Gone with the Wind, but Hitchcock never got the Best Director statue. And now he's
the
darling.
He got a life achievement eventually, but that was it.
That's incredible.
Right, and now he's the darling of both academia and in popularity. So, you're totally right about Rope, 1948, Jimmy Stewart, great movie. These guys, college guys, kill a man and put him under the dining table and put a sheet over it and invite guests over for the party. And Hitch shoots the whole thing in these single takes, and like the gentleman was saying, they ran out of film stock, so they had to come up with clever wipes to do the transitions, like maybe the camera would sweep across someone's back, you know, it was darker. So it has been done before. I remember Elephant, Gus Van Sant did something similar. Mm-hmm. But it's just that it's so hard to do and to pull off, and you have to light each room when you move between the rooms, and just the level of trickery with that Iñárritu pulled off too. You know, you'd be in the dressing room with Keaton, and you'd pan across the room, and suddenly there would be reporters in there that weren't there before, or you'd be on the catwalk with Ed Norton and swoop down to the stage, and Ed Norton's back down there already. So there were so many moments of how did they do this Yeah, the technique's been done before, but it's so impossible to pull off. I think it's worth honoring every time.
The other remarkable thing about that is that the scene in Times Square, which was actually shot in Times Square, mm-hmm. without them shutting it down.
When he's in his underwear.
Yes, walking through, you know, the busiest possible intersection in America and maybe the world. And I think they did that in three takes or something like that. And one of the takes in Iñárritu was shooting on his cell phone because there's cell phone footage. I mean,
wow.
That stuff to me was just fascinating and really impressive.
And, you know, we had a phone caller who wanted to ask about the Neil Patrick Harris underwear thing. And, of course, that was a parody of that scene from Birdman. Mm-hmm. So I just thought we'd save a little time with that one.
If you didn't see Birdman, that might have been a little weird.
Yeah. It was pretty funny, though.
It was funny.
So, Margaret, calling in from Southwest, do you have a question for us?
Yes, I did. I do. Good morning. I was calling to find out, in the wake of all the controversy regarding lack of diversity in the nomination this year, does the Academy plan to change any of its rules with respect to making its nominations so that the films they pick and the categories they pick in the future will be more diverse? And I also wanted to add, is there any way that they can change their rules as to who's on the committee so that the committee can be more diverse?
Anne Hornaday, you want to talk about that?
Well, I do think that that's, I gather that that is, those sorts of conversations are underway. There was a demonstration planned to happen right outside the ceremony last night, and Ava DuVernay, the Selma director, actually intervened and asked them not to do it and instead to engage in a dialogue with the Academy administration.
Really?
Cheryl Boone Isaacs and the officials there. And, you know,
who is the Academy? Can you just give us an idea?
Well, it's around 6,000 film professionals, you know, who have been working in the film industry in various capacities. The biggest block is the acting branch. It's mostly actors. It's mostly people over 60. It's mostly men. So you have a lot of, and it's mostly Caucasian. The president, Cheryl Boone Isaacs, is African-American woman. But one thing, you know, We love to kind of criticize the Academy, and they're often open for it. But to their credit, they are flexible about the rules. I mean, they do change their rules. I mean, every year there's like a little adjustment, especially to the nonfiction category, for example. That's been long bedeviled by problems and accusations that it didn't work right, and they've gone in and tried to fix it. So I'm optimistic that this might. But I take the caller's point that it really is an issue of membership. You know, I mean, they really do have to, I think, improve the ratios mm-hmm. within the ranks.
Are all actors part of the Academy?
No, you have to be invited.
No, it's a very, you know, when you think about it, it's fewer than 6,000 people. So it's really a pretty rarefied, you know, it's a small group.
Wow.
Relatively, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's move on to Best Director. And I'm going to let Jason pronounce his name. The director for Birdman.
Alejandro González Iñárritu.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to say that.
Yes, we were. And for the second year in a row, a Mexican film director has won. And he had something very interesting to say as he received his award about the immigration issue.
Today I want to dedicate this award for my fellow Mexicans, the ones who live in Mexico. I pray that we can find and build the government that we deserve, and the ones that live in this country who are part of the latest generation of immigrants in this country, I just pray that they can be treated with the same dignity and respect of the ones who came before and built this incredible immigrant nation. Thank you very much.
That was quite a powerful acceptance speech.
Jen, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I thought it was great. Unfortunately, when Sean Penn announced that was the best picture, he made a green card comment, which I think was maybe understandably misunderstood on social media because mm-hmm. people have forgotten that Sean Penn knows Iñárritu and has worked with him before. And I think it was more like a joke with a friend, but probably not a joke with a friend that should have been said on the Academy Awards.
it did seem a little misplaced.
Yeah. Okay. So the fact that Iñárritu then, you know, made the statement that he made, I thought was really appropriate and well said.
And a good choice for Best Director, Jason?
Absolutely. And you mentioned the back-to-back Mexican directors. Remember last year, Alfonso Cuarón got it. Mm-hmm. Working with the same cinematographer that won, mm-hmm. They both won director and cinematographer this year as well, Emmanuel Lubezki, on Gravity last year, which mm-hmm. you remember they opened that movie with like a long 20-minute single take. So that was almost a preview of coming attractions for the mm-hmm. long single shot here in Birdman. But yeah, I think so. But like we were saying, if we knew Birdman was going to go for Best Picture, I would have loved to see Linklater get director, or vice versa. To me, I would have liked the vice versa. I think
spread the love around the world.
Yeah, exactly. They both did phenomenal jobs.
Plenty more to come. Songs, some of the more political speeches that we heard last night, all to come on Ask the Movie Critics. The number again is 877-336-1035. We are back in a moment. And we are not alone. We are also joined by Jen Chaney, who writes for The Washington Post, The Dissolve, and others, and Hornaday of The Washington Post, and WTOP's entertainment editor Jason Fraley. Again, the number 877 for your phone calls, 877-336-1035. Also, welcome to submit questions via Facebook and on Twitter with hashtag AskThe.
Well, there were several very political and poignant speeches made last night. We've got a couple of them to play for you, and then we'd love to get your comments. First, for me, the most incredible one, the most poignant one, was Graham Moore, who won for Best Adapted Screenplay for The Imitation Game. And he got up there to receive his Oscar and talked about being an offbeat, weird, and different kind of a kid.
It's long, but we should get it all in.
Yeah.
When I was 16 years old, I tried to kill myself because I felt weird and I felt different and I felt like I did not belong. And now I'm standing here. And so I would like for this moment to be for that kid out there who feels like she's weird or she's different or she doesn't fit in anywhere. Yes, you do. I promise you do. You do. Stay weird, stay different, and then when it's your turn and you are standing on this stage, please pass the same message to the next person who comes along. Thank you so much. I love you guys.
I mean, that brought tears to my eyes. It was incredibly moving. The subject of teen suicide, obviously, something that we're talking a lot about now in the news. Ann Hornaday, you were moved by it,
oh,
I can tell.
I'm moved by it now. It was absolutely perfect. I was so impressed with most of the speeches last night. You know, it's usually we complain about two things, the speeches and the musical numbers. And both of those things were like the high points of the show for me. And there were a lot of political and issue-oriented notes that were struck, but they felt really organic and they felt really classy. I mean, sometimes that doesn't work so well, mm-hmm. but I think in almost every case, they were just beautifully delivered and edifying and moving, and it was a lot of fun to watch them.
Jen, you have a thought?
The thing about Graham Moore, too, is that he did not really seem like he thought he was going to win. I mean, it's hard to know how much he really prepared what he was going to say, but it did not seem as if it was prepared. It felt very extemporaneous, and to be that articulate in those circumstances and to say something so important that related back to the film, I just thought was really, really wonderful and moving, as you said.
And especially in the year of, you know, in memoriam, the year of Robin Williams, even more poignant.
And then another great speech was, which was one of those directors for the short live-action documentary, who mentioned suicide in her speech. I mean, that was a very moving moment.
Yes,
so
it
there was.
Was
this, there was this kind of through line.
We had another poignant speech, I guess, from Boyhood's Patricia Arquette. She drew attention to the issue of women and wages and women's rights. Meryl Streep fist pumping afterwards, and J-Lo, you know, wooting it up. Let's hear what she had to say.
Wooting it up.
It's our time to have wage equality once and for all, and equal rights for women in the United States of America.
You know, could that have been a result of the Sony hacking, where some salaries did come out?
Oh, good
point.
Could
that be fallout from that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I just think, again, you know, it loops back to that conversation we had with the caller about sexism. I just think that some of these things have just hit critical mass, you know, with the help of social media. I mean, Twitter has really become a huge force in terms of galvanizing public opinion, giving people forums and making things stickier than they might have otherwise been.
You know, you talk about in memoriam. There are a lot of folks who are saying that somebody was missing from that.
Yes, indeed.
Let's go to line five. We're going to talk a little bit about that with our caller, Angie, who's checking in from Bethesda. Angie, your question?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah, I was wondering, when I was watching the memoriam for those who have passed on. First of all, here's a quick question. Does the Oscars cover people who have died since the Oscar, or is it a calendar year, January to December? And regardless of that, my question pertains to, they left out one of the most important people, I think, was Joan Rivers, who actually put the red carpet on the map and made it the spectacular, or the spectacle it is. They also left out Elaine Stritch and an actor, character actor named Taylor Negron, but it just seems like they had a lot of people. But I was like, who's that? Who's that? I don't know, but, you know.
Yeah.
So you just wonder, but Joan was just such an icon and such integral to the awards. Wonder why she was left out.
A lot of people had that same reaction, Jason.
Yeah, in terms of the first part of the question, whether it's calendar year or Oscars to Oscars, I'm pretty sure it's Oscars to Oscars because someone on Twitter was asking me about Harold Ramis last year, but I believe he died in February and the Oscars were in March last year. So he was included in last year's, but not this year's. Mm-hmm. So that's why you might be missing some of those people. But in terms of Joan Rivers, I have no explanation for that.
This happens every year when they do the in memoriam. Somebody gets left out, or more than one person gets left out, and everybody gets upset. And
could it be because she wasn't in the movie business?
She was, though. She directed Rabbit Test.
She even wrote Murder at the Academy Awards, like a book, I think.
Did not know that.
I mean, and as that caller said, I felt like it was a demonstration of a disconnect between how those of us at home experience the Academy Awards and how the people within the industry experience it, because for many people, for many years, Joan Rivers was as synonymous with Oscar night as finding out who won Best Picture. And so even though that alone would not have maybe put her in memoriam, the fact that she also was involved in film, it was a huge oversight.
And, you know, we were talking a little bit in the newsroom earlier this morning about Joan Rivers, and there was some, she really wasn't that big in the movies, but her association with the red carpet, something that really didn't occur to me, and that is so true.
And again, you know, I keep beating the same dead horse, but the red carpet has become hugely important for marketing. I mean, I think they're like Jen said, there is a disconnect, and they wouldn't maybe want to admit how much they're dependent on that frou-frou silly ritual, but it helps them.
Mm-hmm.
It helps their movies, and it would be nice if they could be less disingenuous about that.
Well, there was some great music, as you said, and surprisingly,
music was great.
One of the best songs that I heard was Glory, which won for Best Original Song from Selma. Music and lyrics by John Legend and Common. They performed it. It blew the doors off the place. People were crying, and it was really an amazing spectacle. Let's hear a little bit.
From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero, facing the league of justice, his power was the people.
I mean, it's really a brilliant song and a brilliant piece of work.
He had something to say about it, too. Let's get real quick part of it anyway.
Selma is now
because the struggle for justice is right now. Yeah. We know that the Voting Rights Act that they fought for 50 years ago is being compromised right now in this country today. We know that right
now, all the people who thought Selma got overlooked in the awards, this mention and the honor of the song, that was it for Selma for a lot of people.
True, in that, and there were a lot of nominees that went away with just that one. You know, you have your one Imitation Game, your one Boyhood, your one, you know, so in a way, they thinly spread the wealth. I would have liked to have seen it a little more thickly spread, but that's okay.
All right, we have to take a quick break. We'll be back. Again, the number 877-336-1035 for your last 10 minutes with Ask the Movie Critic.
Traffic and weather on the 8s and when it breaks.
Welcome back. We are also with WTOP Entertainment editor Jason Fraley and Ann Hornaday of the Washington Post and Jen Cheney, who writes for the Post and the Dissolve, among others. And we can take your phone calls. We'd love to at 877-336-1035. You're also welcome to submit questions via Facebook or on Twitter using hashtag AskThe.
Well, when they talk about a musical performance coming up on the Oscars, a lot of people roll their eyes because they think they're going to be pretty rotten. Lady Gaga was incredible. She did a tribute to The Sound of Music on the 50th anniversary. Julie Andrews was there. Let's listen a little bit to Lady Gaga. That was a highlight for me, Jen Cheney.
It was a highlight for me, too, and a very pleasant surprise, because on paper, the idea of saying, ladies and gentlemen, let's pay tribute to Julie Andrews, here's Lady Gaga, just sounds like the worst idea in the world.
Right.
And then let's bring out Iggy Azalea to pay tribute to Liza Minnelli. What's happening? But, you know, Lady Gaga, she has a lot of talent, but I didn't think she could hit the notes the way she did. She just nailed it from beginning to end. And then when Julie Andrews came out, it was just this wonderful sort of punctuation mark on it, and everybody in the room was clearly just their hearts were warmed by it. And it, unfortunately, it was 11 o'clock when this happened, so it was a little late in the night. But nevertheless, that was an idea that sounded wrong, that it just ended up being perfectly right.
Well, for those who might have missed it, we have Julie Andrews' response too.
Dear Lady Gaga, thank you for that wonderful tribute. Oh my God, it really warmed my heart. It really did.
She loved it.
Those are 9 words I never thought I'd hear.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really a disconnect.
From Julie Andrews.
But boy, that was a great moment, wasn't it?
I think Gaga, with that performance, and even at the Grammys with the Tony Bennett stuff she was doing, the duets, I think she elevated herself above a lot of her contemporaries. You know, let's see Britney or Taylor Swift go out and hit that, you know? There's no auto-tune there. She just comes out, and I think, you know, a lot of people that know her music, I wasn't that surprised, but I think... Right. You know, a whole bunch of other people realize, man, she's got talent. Watch her play piano, too.
Yeah, I tweeted, you know, she's auditioning for a Broadway show, and she totally made callbacks, because that's what that felt like.
I think a lot of people forget that, you know, she's not just showmanship. She's really got the chops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
There was a comment made after Birdman won that Hollywood likes films about Hollywood. Is that true?
Well, you know, if you look at recent years, Argo wins Best Picture. That's a lovely little story about Hollywood doing the right thing. And then The Artist, which is also a little inside Hollywood portrait. So, yes, I mean, you can make a case that it, you know, I can see how something like Birdman, which very much addresses the anxieties that are engulfing the industry right now in terms of technology and obsolescence and dependence on these tent poles that may not make them feel so great about themselves, you know, to see that represented on screen in such a creative, vibrant way, you know, I can see why they would respond to it, you know, emotionally. And I think I did a story once about what wins Best Picture and why so often you'll see a bifurcation between Best Picture and Best Director. And the Academy members that I interviewed just said it's we choose the one that makes us feel, you know, the most powerful emotional experience. So I can see how they could react emotionally to that movie.
You know, a lot of years we go into the Oscars thinking that there are no surprises. We all pretty much, it's a foregone conclusion, who's going to win. We pretty much know the standouts. That wasn't the case really this year, Jason, was it? There were a lot of horse races.
Yeah. A lot of times you know it's going in. And in this, the three locks were supporting actor, supporting actress, and actress. Everybody knew those. Mm-hmm. But in terms of actor, I thought it could have gone a couple ways.
Mm-hmm. And picture.
Yeah, best picture. I think the picture director split was when where we were all watching, and in the end, the surprise is that Boyhood more or less got shut out. That's the surprise.
They're going to have to do something different with the show next year.
They try that every year. I can't express how much fatigue I have about how every single year, like, they've got to do it differently next year. And then they tweak little things, and then we have the same conversation again. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what the answer is anymore. I mean, we've had incredibly talented people host this show and not do as well as we've seen them do in other contexts. And I just think it's just the Oscars is the Oscars. Like, you know, unless, as we were talking about, it's a matter of, you know, taking some of the maybe smaller awards and maybe not having them be part of the telecast.
Right, there are some technical awards that people just don't care that much about. And if you can do some
things that are tributes
to the film industry and to movies that people would love and make it a little shorter.
And just announce those names sort of like they do at the Grammys without going through every one of those categories maybe. I don't know.
And not backload it so much. I mean, last night, those four big awards were not announced until I think after 11:30. That's just not fair to the viewers.
And we're at midnight, and then Neil Patrick Harris is going into his predictions box, and we're like, no, just tell us best picture. We gotta get to bed.
Anymore.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, this has been a great hour, and it flew by. Thank you all so much for joining us for Ask the Movie Critics. Ann Hornaday of the Washington Post, Jen Chaney, who writes for The Post, The Dissolve, and some other outlets, and of course our own Jason Fraley, WTOP's entertainment editor. Thanks to all of you. It's been a great time, and it was fun to watch the Oscars and do the recap with you. We'll do it again next year.
Thanks very much.
Thank you all. I don't wanna be a big man.